Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, April 13th, 2017. I don't remember what day it was, what month it was. And this says, before the first cup of jewels, here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everyone. It is a little nippy, 43 degrees, very bright and sunny here in upstate New York. The snow is gone, but it is not early summer anymore. We're back to the beginning of spring. So where do we leave off on Tuesday before we were so rudely interrupted by my computer completely going into freak out mode? 5 minutes before the show yesterday, we titled the show Behavioral Addiction, Brain Hijacking, Eyeball Beams, and Augmentation. We had talked about a bunch of things, being able to manipulate our minds and bodies as part of this new 21st century creeping of technology, this eventual merging of man and machine, which is what they are gearing us up for. They're using that dopamine carrot to try to convince the younger generations that it's okay, Johnny. It's okay. You love dopamine. You love the machine. We will be with you at all times, next to your bed. And in your day, you will come to depend on your devices to function. And eventually, it's going to be just too difficult to remember all these devices, these passwords, your keys. I mean, hey, who doesn't forget their keys every day? Not me. But they try and sell this to you. It's like, look, it's going to be so easy in the future if you just don't have to worry about all this stuff. I mean, who can even remember to charge their devices up, Johnny? So don't worry about it. We can use kinetic energy to power the little implants that you won't even see or feel, and it'll give you superpowers. And, we discussed a story. This has come up a few times now. We had Regina Duggan kicking it off back a few years ago with an interview that she had done with a bunch of tech leaders, talking about how amazing it would be with not only implants, but also those little wearable tattoos that would kind of be the transition. They'd make them in pretty colors, and they'd maybe put them in some cool shapes so the teenagers would want to wear them to piss off their parents, her exact words. Having a pre-teen myself and remembering what a little pain in the ass I was, I could tell you that every little teenager wants to have angst against their parents. They want to go out and do things, and they feel that their parents are holding them back. And they don't want to listen to their parents. They want to go out of their way to just push that button to give them the middle finger without doing it. And a special super-powered tattoo put out by DARPA with pretty colors and skulls or whatever symbols that would make your parents mad would be quite a rebellion. Imagine if it could be their cell phone and they could communicate with their friends and text on it and everything. Just wait and see. But this place, I'm not sure where this was. I thought this was in Europe. I watched the video, but we can't do that here anymore. But this came out from Associated Press. Cyborgs at work, employees getting implanted with microchips. Like I said, we've covered this before. They had talked about it in a few different places, psh, painlessly, right between the thumb and the index finger. The syringe slides between the thumb and the index finger. Then, with a click of a microchip, it is injected into the employee's hand, and another cyborg is created. What could pass for a dystopian vision of the workplace is almost routine now at a Swedish startup hub called Epicenter. The company offers to implant its workers and startup members with microchips the size of a grain of rice that function as their swipe cards to open doors, operate printers, or buy smoothies with the wave of a hand. And we read a story on Tuesday about death of a smartphone. I kind of went through the story about how, yes, we love them. They're getting smaller. They're getting better. They're getting faster. They're going to come equipped with virtual reality and augmented reality. And the next will be these little screens that'll zap you in your eyeballs. Remember, we talked about those. Don't ever let it get near your eyeball, people. We're going to talk about the orbital frontal cortex here somewhere. I don't know. I got a couple stories here about things that they can do when they manipulate that orbital frontal cortex. But now we've gone from that smartphone to those little VR devices zapping your eyeball. Now we've literally moved to this next step, and people are already stepping right up, injecting grains of rice into their hands to take the place of that, pesky ID card that you used to have to remember to put on your belt loop every day. Bzoop, zoop, zoop. Too much arm exercise having to whip that thing out. So now let's just make it easy. Now you just put it in your hand. It becomes ubiquitous. You don't even have to remember it's there. You just walk through a doorway. The injections have become so popular that workers at Epicenter hold parties for those willing to get implanted. The biggest benefit, I think, is convenience, says Patrick Masterson, co-founder and CEO of Epicenter. And as a demonstration, he unlocks the door merely by waving near it. And basically, this replaces a lot of things you have, he says. Other communication devices, whether it be credit cards. Talk about Danger Will Robinson. This could be your credit card, too. And your keys. And eventually, remember, with smart homes and smart cars and self-driving cars and whatever, you're not going to need any of those devices that were your security devices before. Now it is just going to be your body as that token, as Regina Duggan talked about. But she was doing swallowables. This is just an injectable. This technology itself is not new. Such chips are used as virtual collar plates for pets. They're going to tag us just like the cats and dogs at the vet office. Companies use them also to track deliveries, but it's just never been used to tag employees on a broad scale before. Epicenter has a handful of other companies that are the first to make these chip implants broadly available. And as with most new technologies, it raises security and privacy issues. And yeah, in one of these clips, I watched a CBS News clip yesterday about this as well. They had people on saying these are so easy to hack. None of this again has security. And people with this Internet of Things. The Internet of Things has already brought DARPA and DARPA Dan to go, oh no, the Internet of Things is so insecure, we need to do something about it. Problem, reaction, solution. I just saw, let's pause for a moment because I didn't open it, but we're going to scroll it. I just saw that because of the Internet of Things, we have this big problem with botnets now. And it appears. That the FBI just shut down a very large botnet attack where they somehow pulled some fast one and got a whole bunch of millions of them to go into action so they could attack them. But get this, guys. Problem, reaction, solution again. The FBI shut down a huge botnet attack, but there are plenty more left. The crackdown was made using new powers, ding, 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 that allows the FBI to remotely access computers that apparently are infected without the users knowing, but accessing computers that the FBI does not have in custody. Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. They have some new powers legally, that if they think you're infected, just like I've said before, once they start diagnosing everybody with mental disease on a spectrum, utilizing your smartphone, nobody will have to bring you in for treatment. They will be able to diagnose you remotely and tell that you have a problem, Johnny. Well, your computers too. They apparently now can tell if you have a botnet infection. And they can access your computer by law remotely, even if it doesn't have it in custody. And of course, it's all in the name of an emergency. The government is also logging the IP addresses of those infected devices, and I'm sure the names of their owners, so that their users could then be alerted by the FBI to the problem in order to remove the botnet malware from their computers. And if you can even believe it, if anyone remembers that FBI virus, quote unquote, back from, oh, I would have to say 2011, maybe, if I had to guess, maybe early 2012, after they announced all the keywords that if they were said in conversation on an electronic device would put you on a red list like Port Cloud, Mexico. We had done a show here at Orion. This is our WTF show, and I don't know, there are probably five, six of us on air. And we made a concerted effort in the, I don't know if it was an hour or two, I think that show was 2 hours, to say every word on that list on air. And shortly thereafter, oh, lo and behold, the machine that we broadcast on, which actually is my machine that is now completely dead in the water because Skype upgrades will not install, and it's an operating system, Vista, that's been fully discontinued by Microsoft, so nothing installs on that computer anymore. They've like turned off the install capability, which is a new one to me. But that machine was completely cut off from the network at that time, was completely isolated by whatever that virus was, unless I installed a patch from an FBI server to fix it. Wink. Like I'd believe that. And you know what? It took Paul a couple days. He figured it out. He got it all back online after a while. So whatever. But we find out later that anyone who had that quote unquote virus, that after that drop dead date, if they didn't go to the FBI website and get that patch, that they would get cut off the network. You know, the virus did it, not the FBI. We found out that for months beforehand, the way the FBI was tracking this virus was that they took everyone who was infected and they put them on an FBI proxy server. So every bit of traffic that was passing through your machine, every search, every phone call, everything you did went through the FBI proxy server. Oh, well, guess what, people? Sounds like they have a similar plan on how to tackle this brand new botnet problem that they said that we have. And the Internet of Things, of course, is so insecure, it's going to make this way, 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 way worse. Add to that now that we are inserting microchips into people who also can be hacked. And herein lies a big problem and the challenge of the future, where people think that this march forward into surveillance is just kind of out there for those people. Oh no, it isn't, people. It is for everyone, and now it's all going to be done in the name of security, and it's not any going to be hackers under every bed, ISIS in every closet anymore. It's going to be for your own safety. Because your car will be tied to it, and your home, and your credit cards, and your fobs, your key fobs, your bank accounts, all of your passwords. Don't worry about it, people. It's coming. This army of weaponized computers, which were utilized to launch this botnet worldwide, had been running, and this is the one in particular they just took down since 2010. And at times numbered as many as 100,000 devices at a crack. But it literally, it could be millions of devices. It could be every device in the internet. And when they turn it on and they can set a date, I mean, we've learned all about them before. We've talked about botnets, but they could set them so a certain date, a certain condition would turn them on. And these, they're literally Trojan horses that are on people's computers and devices all over the world, will come to life and start pushing out traffic. I mean, they could do a denial of service attack easy. Pushing out noise, pushing out pings, pushing out requests, get requests to go to a website Let's say, and as all that traffic at once starts going bing 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 against one IP address, it shuts it down. It cuts it off the internet because no traffic can get in because it gets flooded with requests. Well, that's how you could take down a website easily. That's how you could take down, think about it, an IP surveillance camera or somebody's key fob in their hand. If it's got an address, you could take it down that way. So, in all honesty, botnets are very dangerous. But I don't think the way around them is giving the FBI newfound powers to be able to route device IP addresses through some proxy server and then alert the end users that, oh, yes, they've been infected and we've been watching you. Because that's just another easy way that they can manufacture things and do complete blanket, unwarranted surveillance for any particular reason. Oh, whoops, got a botnet attack. Gotta take this 100,000 devices and monitor them endlessly till we get it under control. I mean, this to me sounds like somebody is feeding us a little line of bull here, but believe it, people, because it was in MIT Technology Review. That's what they're telling you anyway. So this army of weaponized computers, in this last case, have been running since 2010, and at times numbered as many as 100,000 devices at a time, according to the Justice Department. This malware scours computers running Windows for usernames and passwords, as well as intercepted network traffic to the same ends. It leveraged those details and its presence on devices to provide a platform from which they sent spam. So they must have used spam email bombs and performed ransomware attacks, like what happened to me a couple weeks ago on my one tab when we went to Wired Magazine. You got a virus, you can't close anything, and your computer is now locked. Call us and pay us $1 million or you lose all your data. And the service that had been running had even been hired out to other cyber criminals. A New York Times report contains more detail. And this hacker's name was Levashov. And it included his collusion also with who? Oh, the Russian government. Now, you know, of course, this again, the narrative is being crafted. So it is the rogue Russian government that is working with a rogue hacker that is hacking all these machines using botnets that now makes the FBI have new powers to be able to take over everybody's machines to keep you safe. Now, I'm going to tell you way, way, way back in the days when we did have real hackers. And it wasn't this whole new, brave new world of cyber war that they are waging between countries, China, Russia, and the US in particular. We did have hackers out there from the former Eastern Soviet bloc. We used to find them from a lot of those different former Soviet countries. I mean, I would stay away from anything that had like an RU extension on the website or an HU Hungary, some of those other places. I mean, it's possible, but they were way ahead of the curve with hacking. It was more of a an organized crime thing rather than something that was in collusion with governments and cyber patrol back in those days. But anyway, now the FBI has neutralized that Lesharov by creating dummy servers. And this is what I was saying. This is like that last time we had the virus that the FBI saved us from. And these dummy servers receive requests for instructions that are sent out by the infected devices. It blocks those instructions from making them to the devices. And this crackdown was made possible by new powers that allow the FBI to remotely access computers that it does not have in custody. This government, the FBI, is also logging the IP addresses of all the infected devices so that their users can be alerted to the problem wink, in order to remove the botnet malware from their computers. It is a significant piece of work on part of the FBI, so they got a pat on the back and a pat on the butt, and a clear signal that the U.S. government is cracking down on one of the most pernicious cyber threats of the day. Look out! Because remember, like I said, and like we have read, and like we've heard DARPA Dan tell us before, the Internet of Things is ripe for the plucking. There is no security anywhere. And I, you know, even the Internet itself was never designed with the security in the beginning, but I'm almost thinking maybe DARPA designed it that way. I don't know, it just kind of spun out that way. But now we have mayhem all secure. That was that DARPA-funded immune system for the Internet, AI that is able to go out, search, repair, and destroy. So now you don't have to worry about having malware software or antivirus once this thing is out. They've been using it to scan software of the iOS that runs on all the big routers that run the backbone of the Internet to find vulnerabilities. And now they're going to put it for hire, $29.95. We'll scan your perimeter on a monthly basis. Every computer, another $8 for a license. I don't know. I'm just making up numbers, but see how this could work. We'll run it from the cloud. We'll let it go on the Internet. So it'll be out there and ubiquitous forever. And it'll be a cyber century. And that is what's happening here, people. This is the beginnings of Skynet, but there's a bunch of Skynets all being born all at the very same time. And given autonomy that doesn't require human input, human oversight, says this is just one of many botnets in use around the world, some of which commandeer millions of devices at a time. And this threat looks set to get way worse, ding, 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 before it gets better. As connected devices proliferate in our homes and in our offices, and I'm going to add to that in our bodies, there are more and more pieces of hardware available to do cyber criminals' bidding. In fact, the situation appears to be getting so bad that we made the so-called botnet of things one of our 10 breakthrough technologies of 2017, the botnet of things. There you go, guys. That puts the writing on the wall. See, the surveillance and rolling out how bad the surveillance is, I think, was to kind of get us used to it. I think was to try to get the older people to feel that fear button, because younger people, they're all about giving it up to the machine. They're all about putting it out there. They don't give two shits who's watching, but the older people do. But hey, if you can get the FBI to watch you, and it's going to keep you safe from the scary Russian hackers who now are commandeering your IP camera that you were using in your living room to watch, you know, Fluffy while you were at work or on vacation, you know, that is going to be a-okay in your book. Don't worry about it. The FBI's got it all under control. The fear, ding, is that increasingly large botnets could be used to carry out attacks that are targeted at internet infrastructure providers, like that one that took down parts of the West Coast's web last October. Ding. See, you guys felt a little pain. So far, attacks have been relatively small and short-lived. But hey, as cyber patrols get their hands on them, this increasingly centralized nature of the Internet means that it could one day become catastrophic. Oh, be afraid, people. Be very afraid. And whether that means leaking vast quantities of data. Yes, so they're going to swipe all your private secrets off your machine and put them online, or just simply taking the whole Internet offline, and then all of our little dopamine junkies are gonna be jonesing. Congress, of course, is also aware of the scale of the problem, and clearly the government agencies are too. So don't worry about it, people, because they're gonna work on it. And they have given the FBI new powers to take care of it all. So November 29th, 2016, conveniently enough, just a few months before this big attack happened, Congress expanded government hacking powers. Privacy advocates and legal scholars are worried about the consequences of making it easier for investigators to obtain warrants for devices they don't have in custody. Well, the FBI got a lot more authority to hack into computers during criminal investigations, whether or not you're considered a criminal. And investigations can already get a warrant to remotely access information on the device of the suspect in a criminal case. But the warrant has to come from a judge located in the same district as the target device. Well, if the agents don't know the location or they guess it wrong, which can happen if the suspects are using, you know, those scary tools that anonymize you like Tor, they could get the evidence thrown out. So I guess Tor isn't going to be a protection anymore, because that's happened in a number of cases stemming from a 2014 investigation into hundreds of individuals that, of course, were peddling child porn. And yes, it's the child pornographers who are hacking your machines. People, be afraid. Be very afraid. But under new rules that took effect in November, a federal judge is now able to issue a warrant to remotely access, search, seize, or copy data from a computer outside of the district if the computer's location has been, quote, concealed by technological means, unquote. Ding, ding, a ding. Guys, this really swept and snuck under the rug without people noticing, including me. We missed this one. So a similar rule change will also make it easier to investigate botnets. Wink, wink. So we had to, of course, come up with a botnet case to justify it. Like that one that caused a massive internet outage in California, investigators will be able to ask a judge to issue a single warrant to remotely search computers that are in five or more jurisdictions and that have been, quote unquote, damaged without authorization. So we'll just go in and we'll just start taking stuff. Who knows? I mean, this is frightening. There have been a number of times, I'm going to tell you guys, and you know, if you've listened to this show, you know, I sound a little tinfoil hatty sometimes, but I'm really not. I can go off on my little flights of fancy looking into the future, but that doesn't mean that I'm not of sound mind, know what I'm talking about, at least from a technological perspective. I've been doing this stuff for a really long time. And there have been times that I have gone onto my editing computer in particular. I can remember a whole bunch of times. And, you know, that's where I cut all the episodes that people pre-record for UCY. And typically, at least for the last 20-plus years that I've been tinkering on a PC for my daily work, you know, when you open an application and you go file open, once you're in the application to go open a file, it typically will go back to the last directory that you were referencing. And then you go, oh yeah, there it is. Look, I'm in the main directory I was pulling all my MP3s from. It does it every time. Every time you go there, it goes to the last directory that you were accessing. Well, there have been quite a number of times here over the last, and this isn't even recently, this is probably over the last year, maybe year and a half. And randomly, it's not always, there have been quite a number of times where I've gone to get a file that I've pulled down to be able to edit, to get it ready for airing over the weekend, let's say, when I have the majority of them. And instead of going to the directory where I download all of my pre-records to add the bumpers and edit length of time or whatever, it goes into a completely different directory that either A, I've never been into, like one deep in the bowels of Windows, and even that I thought, well, maybe there was an update or something that I wasn't aware of, and that's where it just put the files. But there have been other times it's gone into directories that I haven't been into in literally 5 years. You know, ones that might have personal pictures or ones that might have, you know, some files that I saved as a PDF and some of my investigations. And I thought to myself, Who would have been on my machine accessing something from that directory? I've asked my husband. I mean, this office is my exclusive domain, pretty much. Nobody comes out here because it's kind of messy. But it's mine. It's all mine. As far as my space, this is my quiet space. But who on earth would have been out there? And it hasn't been any of my family. So I don't know. Just momentary breakages of windows, I guess, is what I always chalked it up to, with a little wink on the side. But you know that they've been doing stuff. I mean, it could have very easily been a hacker as well. But we have been remotely accessed for a long time. But now I guess, hey, if they can even think that your machine has been compromised by some sort of online threat, you could be caught up in the sweep that allows them to start snooping around to see what you're doing and who you are talking to. A similar rule change will also make it easier to investigate botnets, blah, blah, blah. We already read that. The U.S. Department of Justice says that these changes, which are being made to Rule 41 of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure, are necessary for law enforcement to keep up with the kinds of crime that are being committed online and do little more than streamline the warrant process. In November 18th, a letter to Senator Ron Wyden, and Ron Wyden had been one of the only senators that was standing up against any of this stuff. Wyden stood up for a lot of stuff that we also stood up for. And I don't know, poor Wyden. Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon, the Assistant Attorney General Peter Katsic said in the amendments to Wyden, quote, "It would not authorize the government to undertake any search or seizure or use any remote search technique that is not already permitted under current law." So we're just going to enforce it, but it was already permitted for the FBI to get into your machines, apparently. But privacy advocates and civil liberties advocates, technology companies like Google, and opponents in Congress say that these amendments, and you know, of course, Google has to stand up and say, oh no, this is bad, this is bad. But I think they do that just to make their stock price keep going up because Google's doing their own surveillance. And I think Google sees that they're going to have competition if the FBI is in there sniffing your data as well. But these guys all say that these amendments open the door to a dangerous expansion of the government's authority to conduct surveillance. They say that the broad language in these amendments could apply to circumstances far beyond the ones that the government describes. Quote unquote, major policy decisions like this should have to go through Congress, argues Wyden, and I would agree with that. It didn't even go through Congress, just went through the judicial branch and gave it a rubber stamp. For example, concealing one's location, quote unquote, by technological means, i.e., Tor, or any of the other hidemyass.com softwares, could refer to a wide range of technologies and behaviors, like using a virtual private network, using ad blocking software that conceals your geolocation, or even changing the location setting on a social media profile. Oh, maybe that's why my Facebook profile was locked the other day, because I'm located out of, oh, I don't even remember, some freaky country. I don't even remember the name. Well, that's messed up. So, hey, don't lie about where you live so every freak on the internet can find you. I don't know, I think it was something like Kathmandu or one of those places. The language of the new rules suggests that if you do one of those things and a judge deems your device relevant to a crime, law enforcement could get permission to access it. If this rule is not stopped, which it wasn't, anyone who is using any technological means to safeguard their location privacy could find themselves suddenly in the jurisdiction of a prosecutor-friendly or technically naive judge anywhere in the country, argues Rainey Reitman, activist director at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. The other rule change is raising concerns about the Fourth Amendment rights of innocent people whose computers have been co-opted into a botnet, which can be composed of millions of computers located all around the world Orrin Kerr, a law professor at George Washington University who specializes in criminal procedure and computer crime and who was part of the committee that proposed the rule changes, says the Congress should consider what the government owes those machine owners. Should the government do nothing, leaving the victims' computers infected, or should the government take steps to patch, ding, 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 those computers, or encourage others to patch them? And if so, how? Well, we found out in that other story they're going to send you a nice little note saying, we're the FBI, and we've been looking around on your machine, and we found out you're infected, and we've been proxying you somehow, so you better get it fixed. Otherwise, I don't know, like that old virus, you'll just go offline one day. Given such unanswered questions, opponents of the changes say that Congress needs more time to deliberate. Woodrow Hartzog, a law professor at Stanford University who specializes in privacy law, says that the history of computer crime law shows that vague language can also lead to unintended consequences as technology evolves, and even slight vagaries or miscalculations can result in dramatic expansions of power, citing language in the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act passed in 1986 that has created, quote, an incredible amount of confusion over what actually constitutes a crime. Given the stakes, Hartzog says the changes to Rule 41 would seem to require lots of deliberation and probably some sort of legislative correction. Well, don't worry about it, guys, because that law did get passed. That story was from November, and we just read a story then that was from this month in April, and it appears that they just got that Russian hacker using that new law. But don't worry about it, guys, because one of our champions way back from the 90s, Kevin Mitnick. Kevin Mitnick was a hacker back in the early days of the internet, if anyone remembers him. Mitnick got caught, and I remember he was, I don't remember exactly what his crime was, but he was doing stuff that pissed the government off. And they caught him one day, and he had to go to federal prison for a while. And all of us techs used to watch everything that Kevin Mitnick did because he was interesting. He was one of those people that put his middle finger up and said, hey, I am a cowboy in the new Wild West of this thing we call the internet, and I know way more than you do, federal government. And back in those days, that's the way it was. The feds had no clue, and the hackers and the technology companies really had charge of everything that was happening out there. Well, Mitnick got caught, and he was in federal prison. Mitnick got out, oh, I would say probably 10, 12, 15 years ago maybe already. And one of the things when he first got out, he wasn't allowed to go near a computer. That was one of his punishments. He was not allowed to touch one. I don't know if that still is true. But in the meantime, Mitnick created his own cybersecurity company. And I think he's a cyber advisor or something of that nature. Well, back in February, story came out. Famed hacker Kevin Mitnick is now going to show you how to go invisible online. I was so happy to see that somebody from the old days actually raised their head and had something to say about it. And even if he doesn't raise the red alarm, the fact that he's going to show you how to go invisible, like I was saying, stop feeding the machine. Stop putting your data out there everywhere so they have another tool to be able to profile you, to be able to make you vulnerable, to be able to surveil you, apparently. Find ways to go off-grid. Find ways to distance yourself from that dopamine button. So it's not even just the surveillance. It is being sucked into the machine. I'll read a little bit of this Mitnick story, and then we're going to go to where this is all leading, where we ended up on Tuesday. So Kevin Mitnick actually wrote this story. If you're like me, one of the first things you do in the morning is check your email. And if you're like me, you also wonder who else has read your email. And that's another thing that has happened to me occasionally, not with my emails per se, though there's a few times where an email has been read and I haven't quite read it yet. And it's like, whoa, where did that get read? But definitely in texting and in instant messaging for icons, There's a lot of times where I don't even get an alert, especially recently. Like it's open somewhere else and someone else is getting my alert, yet there's messages there, ones that I never read, but they are already read somewhere else. And I don't care. Like I said, we all say, oh, I don't care because I'm not doing anything. And I almost actually said that. But I do care because I don't like being violated. And my right to privacy, which is a right based upon this constitution that is being eroded in front of our eyes, is being violated. And that to me is not fair. That is not the type of world that I want my child to grow up in. One where you can't even have a thought, you can't even express yourself for what you really think and feel in a private message because somebody else will be reading it. Somebody will be archiving it somewhere to put in your dossier that is then there forever and ever. Yes, that's what it's come down to, people. That's exactly what it's come down to. So you go to get a job someday, little Johnny. You go to college someday, little Johnny. Guess what? They're going to want your login. They're going to make you log in right in front of them. And that sounds kind of bizarro, but I'm going to tell you, I went to a school event the other night, for the incoming students of next year. And the principal gave the presentation and he told us that he said colleges and employers hit these employee job fairs and things. It's one of the things that they want now at an interview. They want you to log into your social media accounts and they're going to look at them. They're going to look at what you post. They're going to look at what you say to your friends, and they're going to determine whether or not you're the type of person that they want to have working for them. And not only that, I mean, we can get even a step further getting into this giving up your biometric data, giving up your DNA swabs, and what can be done with that information as well. We hit that story about the workplace and everybody wearing Fitbits and using biometric IDs to even buy things out of the snack machines and where that data is going. And it gets even worse. It gets even worse. But anyway, so he says, and like me, you also wonder who else has read your email. And that is not a paranoid concern. If you use any type of web-based email service, such as Gmail or Outlook 365, the answer is kind of obvious and it is frightening. And even if you delete an email the moment you read it on your computer or your mobile phone, that does not necessarily erase the content because there is still a copy of it somewhere. Webmail is cloud-based, so in order to be able to access it from any device, anywhere, at any time, you have to have redundant copies. And we've talked about the cloud. That cloud is where it's all headed, and that is the plan. If you use Gmail, for example, a copy of every single email ever sent and received through your Gmail account, is retained on various servers worldwide at Google. This is also true if you use email systems provided by Yahoo, Apple, AT&T, Comcast, Microsoft. Even your workplace and any emails that you send can also be inspected at any time by the hosting company as well. Because, of course, all these individuals have rights, being the holders of your ubiquitous data that you agreed to when you signed up for a cloud service. And any emails that you sent can be inspected by the hosting company and allegedly, wink, this is to filter out malware, like we talked about, all about keeping you safe. But the reality is that these third parties can and do access our emails for other, more sinister and self-serving reasons. While most of us may tolerate having our email scanned for malware, perhaps some of us tolerate scanning for advertising purposes, which they do in Gmail. But the idea of third parties reading our correspondence and acting on specific contents found within specific emails is downright disturbing, and Facebook does that as well in instant messaging. If you're typing about something and all of a sudden you'll start seeing an ad, yet you were typing in a private message. I've had that happen to me. The least you can do is to make it much harder for them to do so. So the first thing you can do is to start with encryption. Most web-based email services use encryption when the email is in transit. However, when some services transmit mail between, they may not be using encryption. Thus, your message is out in the open. To become invisible, you will need to encrypt your messages. Most email encryption uses what's called asymmetrical. That means that I generate two keys. A private key stays on my device, which I never share, and then a public key that I post freely on the internet. The two keys are different, yet mathematically they are related. I don't know. Do we want to really get into how deep encryption is? Picking the encryption service. Both the strength of the mathematical operation and the length of the encryption key determines how easy it is for someone to crack a key without your code. Encryption algorithms in use today are public. You want that. Public algorithms have been vetted for weaknesses, meaning people have been purposefully trying to break them. And whenever one of the public algorithms becomes weak or is cracked, it is retired and newer, stronger algorithms are used instead. The keys are under your control. And so, as you might guess, their management is very important. If you generate an encryption key, you and no one else will have the key to your stored device. The problem is, if anything ever happens where that key gets corrupted or that key gets damaged in some way, like I know people who've been encrypting their hard drives. And the thing is, if anything happens to that encryption, your hard drive could be hosed, and that would be a problem because there's no getting that data back. On top of encryption, there are other things like your metadata. And if you guys want to read this whole story, like I'm saying, it's super long. I will put this in the notes so you can catch the whole entire thing if you really want to read about end-to-end encryption and encrypting not only your data but your voice as well. There are tools out there and plugins. Even if you encrypt your email messages, a small but information-rich part of your message is still readable by just about anyone. In defending itself from the Snowden revelations, the U.S. government stated repeatedly that it does not actually capture the contents of your email, which in this case would be unreadable with a PGP encryption. Instead, the government says it only collects metadata of the email. But what is email metadata? Wait, we knew we had phone metadata. What's email metadata? What's the information in the to and from fields, as well as the IP addresses of the various servers that handle the email from the original to the recipient? It also includes the subject line, which sometimes can be very revealing to the encrypted contents of the message. And metadata, a legacy form from the early days of the internet, is still included on every single email received and sent. But modern email readers hide this information from display. Right, there's a way you can get that out of there, though. And that may sound okay since third parties are not actually reading the content, but you probably don't care about the mechanics of how those emails traveled, but the various server addresses and the timestamps. But you'll be surprised at how much they can learn from the path that that email and the frequencies of email reveal. And according to Snowden, our email, text, and phone data is being collected by the NSA and other agencies, but the government can't collect metadata from everyone, or can it? Well, technically, no. However, there has been a sharp rise in legal collection since 2001. To become truly visible in the digital world, you will need to do more than encrypt your messages. You will need to also remove your true IP address, which we just found. If you're not using your true IP and you're hiding behind some sort of Tor or hidemyass.com, that will make you a potential to the FBI in scanning your stuff. Remove your true IP address. This is the point of your connection to the internet, your fingerprint. And it can show where you are down to your physical home address and what provider you use. You also want to obscure your hardware and software. When you connect to a website online, a snapshot of your hardware, and they will also tell you what operating system and everything in your browser and your software you are using may be collected by the website. You also want to defend your anonymity. Attribution attribution online is hard. Proving that you were at the keyboard when an event occurs is difficult. However, if you walk in front of a camera that's connected to a device on your computer, or if you're even going online at Starbucks or an internet cafe, or if you just bought a latte at Starbucks with your credit card, these actions can be linked to your online presence just a few moments later. To start, your IP address reveals where you are in the world, what provider you use, and the identity of the person paying for the internet service, which may or may not be you. And all these little pieces of information are then included within the email metadata that can later be used to identify you uniquely. Any communication, whether it is email or not, can be used to identify you based on your IP address that they assign to the router that you are at and using while you're at home, at work, or at a friend's. IP addresses and email, of course, can be forged, and someone might use a proxy, but that email appears to originate from another location. But a proxy is like a foreign language translator. When you speak to that translator, the translator speaks to the foreign language speaker, and only the message remains exactly the same. The point here is that someone might use a proxy from China or Germany to evade detection on an email that really comes from North Korea, and that's some of the stuff that they've been accusing the feds of doing, of course, to make it look like hacks came from Russia when they really didn't. One way to mask your IP address is to use the Onion router named Tor, and like we just saw, if you use Tor, that makes you a suspect again, which is what Snowden did. And Tor is designed to be used by people living in harsh regimes, now the United States as well, as a way to avoid censorship of popular media and services and to prevent anyone from tracking what search terms they use. Tor remains free and can be used by anyone, anywhere, even you. But remember, that new law, that change to whatever it was called, Rule 41, now makes you a suspect if you have used its software. To use Tor, you will need a modified Firefox browser from the Tor site, which is torproject.org, if anyone wants to check it out. Not that I would recommend it now, but it might be worth looking at ways around things. Remember, this is from Kevin Mitnick. Another thing to do is to create a new invisible secret account. Legacy email accounts might be connected in various ways to other parts of your life, and I've done that as well, but they get all intermingled, which is hard to do. And don't use that for anything personal at all. To keep this account anonymous, you can only access this account from within Tor. So your IP address of that email account will never, ever be associated with you. As you can see, becoming invisible and keeping yourself invisible requires tremendous discipline and perpetual diligence, but it is worth it. The most important takeaways are, first, be aware that every way that someone can identify you, even if you undertake some but not all the precautions, isn't too difficult. And if you do undertake all these precautions, know that you need to perform due diligence every single time you use your anonymous accounts, with absolutely no exceptions. This story came from an excerpt from The Art of Invisibility. The world's most famous hacker teaches you how to be safe in the age of Big Brother and Big Data by Kevin Mitnick, 2017. So that might be one to take a look at on Amazon and take a read if you can. So anyway, how is it going to get worse? Well, people inserting tracking devices into their hands, while biologically safe, the data generated by these chips can show how often an employee comes to work or what they buy. And unlike company swipe cards or smartphones, they generate the same data. A person cannot easily separate themselves from the chip or turn it off. Putting things into your body is quite a big step. And it was even for me at first, says Mesterson, one of the people involved in this epicenter place in Sweden. But then on the other hand, People have been implanting things into their body like pacemakers and stuff to control your heart for a very long time. Yeah, we found out. Didn't some guy's pacemaker bust him for insurance fraud just recently? Or he said that he had a fire and then they find out that he jumped out a window and his heart rate didn't go up or something. And they accused him of, based on his pacemaker data, of fraud and arson. Anyway, this epicenter is home to more than 100 companies and 2,000 workers. Began implanting workers in January of 2015. 150 workers now have them, and a company based in Belgium is also offering its employees such implants. And there are other isolated cases around the world where tech enthusiasts have tried this out in the last few years. So now that leads us to where we're going to kick this off tomorrow. Workplace surveillance is the new office perk. Americans are offering more and more of their personal data up at work, and it is getting much harder to opt out. Peer pressure is going to work on you. The insurance companies and the organizations you work for are going to force you through making you safe, making it cheaper, making it better, making your data more available as a convenience to you to get you on the grid so they can watch everything that happens. Good old Alice has to either input a personal code or use her fingerprints to buy stuff from the snack machine, and she is not exactly sure where that data goes or what it will be used for. They also have her colleagues wearing Fitbits. Again, data that's being sent to a third-party company by her employer as a health insurance Get Fit project. They are also having yearly blood workups. And they are saying that if you opt out of this, they're going to increase your insurance. But again, they don't know who has that data, where it's going, or even if her employer gets to see it.
This is Ozzy Skateboard, and you're listening to UCY.